So last week, and I promise I won't summarize every week because by week 13, it would just take up the whole sermon summarizing, right? But last week, we kicked off our summarized series looking at a big, broad stroke look at the Bible and trying to understand the bigger plot of the Bible so that when we read Scripture, we might be able to make more sense of what we're reading. We kicked it off with Genesis 1 through 11. And it's important because Genesis 1 through 11 covers almost half of all the biblical timeline. Almost half of it. And so it obviously must be very important. And what we find in Genesis 1 through 11 is that God created the heavens and the earth. He created man in his image. Man chose to sin, causing separation between man and God. And for the rest of the Bible, what we have is God's pursuit of his creation, calling them back to him. And because he's a God of order, and because he's the God that he is, he had a plan for how this all would take place. And he set it in motion with what we're going to talk about today, and that is the call of Abram, or how we would know him mostly in the Bible as Abraham. And I want to cover a couple of different terms, I guess is the best way for it, just to help us in case you're ever wondering what these terms meant or why they call these people this or whatever the case may be. But let's look at a couple of things, all right? First of all, the word Abram, the name Abram means exalted father. So his dad and mom, once they gave birth to Abram, must have thought very highly of him, right? Names mean a lot in the Bible. Maybe it was just a random, I kind of like the name Abram. It starts with A. Let's go with that one. But I'm guessing that they probably saw something special. They heard from God. They named him Abram, which means exalted father. Well, later in the Bible, he will be renamed by God as Abraham, which means father of nations. That one makes sense to us, doesn't it? Because God made a promise to him and said, I'm going to make you a great nation. And so father of nations makes sense. And he changed his name in Genesis when he was re-upping his commitment, his covenant promise to him. Well, his wife's name was Sarai, S-A-R-A-I, and that means princess or woman of strength. But it also is the possessive form of Sarah, so my Sarah. And so when God changed her name, it was still princess, woman of strength, but instead of you belong to yourself, you now belong to me as God, your father. And so those are a couple of things you might see. So when I say Abram, I'm speaking of Abraham. When I talk about Abraham, we're talking about Abram, Sarai, Sarah, same deal. Okay? A couple other things that we ought to know, just for perspective's sake. When Abram was 75 years old, that's when he left his father's home and went to Canaan, which would become the land of promise someday for the Israelites. Okay, when he was 75 years old. Imagine getting the calling on your life when you were 75 years old. I finally know what I want to be when I grow up, right? And some of us are still on that journey. We get it, right? He was 80 at the birth of his first son, Ishmael, which we'll get to a little bit later. He was 99 when his name was changed to Abraham, father of nations. He was 100 at the birth of Isaac, who would become the son of promise and who the calling would continue and the covenant would continue with the Israelites. And he was 175 when he died. Now, Genesis 1 through 11, if you read through it carefully, people were living to be 400, 500, 600, even 900 years old before they would die. And God said after the flood that he was going to limit the number of years that people would live. And so we started to see shorter lifespans. But 175, that's still a pretty long lifespan, right? I think that I would equate it probably to having a calling on our life when we were 50. And maybe being told that we were going to have a child at 60. And still thinking, wow, that's way too old, right? To have a child and to be having all of this happen later in life. That's what's happening with Abram or Abraham. A couple of other terms that I want us to understand, because we're going to refer to these people for much of the summer and probably the whole summer, but there's this group called the Israelites or Jews or Hebrews. And it might cause you, as it did me someday or one day, that I was like, I wonder where these words came from. Why are they referred to in many different ways? Well, Jew or Jewish is Hebrew for the word of Judah. Now, we're going to get to later in the summer how there was a dividing of the kingdom of the Jewish people. We'll get to that later. But the southern kingdoms were referred to as Judah. So people that were of Judah or of Israel were referred to as Jews. Hebrew is a word that means one that has traversed. One that has traversed. That obviously fits. as Abram was called, and he traversed to a new land, and then they traversed to Egypt, and then they traversed to the promised land. And so Hebrew makes a lot of sense, that one who has traversed, but it also is what the name of this guy that's in Abram's family line, Eber, that's what his name means. All right, so that's what all of that comes from. When you see the word Hebrew, it's just simply one that traverses. And then there's Israel, which means God perseveres or let God prevail. And in Genesis chapter 32, this guy named Jacob, so we have Abraham. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. Isaac gave birth to, well, you know their wives did, right? Isaac had Jacob and Esau. And are you guys alive today? You all right, everybody? I used my best stuff in the announcements and didn't get a smile out of you, okay? Isaac had Jacob and Esau. Jacob would be renamed in Genesis 32 as Israel. And it means God perseveres because he wrestled with him. But that also, it makes sense for the people of Israel to be a people that perseveres. So those are just some words, some phrases that I want us to understand, that as you read through your Bible, that you would understand when you see the word Jewish or Hebrew or Israel, they're all the same group of people, but understanding where those come from. And the same with Abram, Abraham, Sarai, and Sarah. Okay? Now, here's the big question when it comes to this section of the overview of the Bible. Why did God choose Abram? Why that guy? I mean, what did he do that was so special that he would grab God's attention and say, he's the guy that I'm going to start with? Why not an Egyptian? Why not a Midianite? Why not an Ammonite? Why not someone else? Why did he choose him? Now, we could go back to Noah having Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and Ham did something bad, so the Israelites came from Shem. But what about Japheth? He could have taken someone from his line. Why did God choose Abram? Because Genesis chapter 12, here's how it reads. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So let's break this down. All right. Go from your country. All right. To the land I'm going to show you, and listen to all the promises that God's make. I'm going to make you a great nation, meaning there's going to be a lot of people. I'm going to bless you and make your name great. I'm going to bless you by having you be honored, that everybody will know who Abram was, so that you will be a blessing. So he doesn't say, I'm going to bless you and make your name great so that your name can be lifted high, you can be elevated, and that everybody might know who you are, but it's not for your glory, but it's so that you'll be a blessing to others. And so that's another promise. I will bless those who bless you. So if you bless Abraham and the people of Israel, you'll be blessed. And him who dishonors you, I will curse. Man, what an awesome protection that would be. That God says, I'm going to curse whoever dishonors you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And if I counted correctly, there are five different promises that God makes to Abram in this calling. But it still gives us the question, why this guy? Why did God choose Abram? Well, first of all, I would say that if we were going to pick a few things that might lead us into that direction, we would start with the fact that Abram's a gracious guy. When Abram left and he went from his to the promised land, or what would become the promised land, he took along his nephew with him. Anybody remember what his nephew's name was? Lot. Yeah, his Lot, or Lot. He took him with him. And at one point, the Bible tells us in Genesis 13, it says, Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together. Their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. And Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, I will go to the right, or if you take the right hand, I will go to the left. Now, I've had 4 yards in my life. Only the ones that I owned. I had to rental. I had to take care of it. That's a long story. Anyway, so of these 4 yards, there was 1 yard that gave me all kinds of grief. And it was a new neighborhood. It was new construction in Brownsburg, Indiana, west of Indianapolis. And everybody was trying to grow grass. And the reason that we struggled so much was that when they sold the land, they took out all the topsoil. just peeled it all out and went and sold it somewhere else. So left us all with this desert land to try to grow grass. And so we needed, if you really wanted it to grow well, you needed some good soil. Now, it wasn't a big pot, but that's the only kind of soil I could find in my garage. So there you go. So we have good soil. And you know that if you plant flowers, that if you can put something in the soil, mix it up, you're going to have a better chance of things growing. You're going to have a better chance of yielding some kind of crop or food. We all know the importance of having good soil and good land. Well, Abram was standing there with Lot. He's like, we can't exist in the same house. We're just at each other's throats. And so Abram was so gracious, he said, you choose which way you want to go. Now, if you were Lot and you were offered this opportunity, which way would you go? He had all this land that was plush that his animals could eat. And obviously the soil was great. And he's like, you could go there or you could go to this other side where things just don't look quite as good. In fact, over this area, he saw Sodom and Gomorrah. So there were some established cities that were there as well. And so Lot, not being a dummy, he's like, well, I mean, Abram, if you don't care, and if you're not going to force me one way or the other, I'm going to take this area. You know, this place where all the grass is growing, this place where my animals can feed. This makes more sense. And that was gracious by Abram, because didn't he have the right to choose whatever he wanted? I mean, he was the one called by God. He could have said to Lot, he's like, listen, punk, you're even lucky that I let you come with me. And so I'm going to take this spot. And in fact, I'm just going to give you this little square over here. I mean, he could have done anything he wanted because he was the one called by God. But instead, he showed himself to be gracious. Abram was a warrior. This story gets often overlooked when it comes to the story in the life of Abram. But so Lot went and he lived in this land where these two famous cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, were. Sodom and Gomorrah would be destroyed by God eventually. But while he was there at Sodom, and he was he would be at the front of the city gate, so he had rose in prominence within the city. But there were these five kings that decided they didn't like this one king of Sodom. And so they decided they were going to wage war on him. And Sodom got some kings around him as well. So it was five kings against four kings. And Sodom was taken capture, and including Lot and his family. Lot and his family, his possessions, all those things were taken away. Well, word came to Abram, and so Abram said, I'm not going to stand for this. And so Abram mustered all his guys, and they were 318 men. 318 men that Abram used to go after these guys. And this is what it says in Genesis 14. Now, the valley of Siddim was full of bitumen pits, tar pits. And as the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some fell into them, and the rest fled to the hill country. So the enemy took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah, all their provisions, and they went their way. They also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling in Sodom, and his possessions, and they went their way. So Abram again mustered all the guys that he could come up with in his not family, because he didn't have any kids yet, but they were his servants and his workers and employees. 318 and said, we're going to rescue my nephew Lot. And they went in, and it must have been against thousands. I mean, this is Gideon type stuff that we find in Judges chapter 6. That God would miraculously help Abram to overcome all of these kings. They attacked at night and they took back all the plunder and they got Lot and his family back as well. Abram was a... I want to break this because it's not mine. He was a mighty warrior. Now, of course, they didn't have guns and stuff, so I'm sure that they had bows and arrows, right, that they were shooting into things. But he was a mighty warrior. And I think that, again, it gets often overlooked about who Abram is. We think of the guy that was called to lead, and he's an older guy. But as soon as he heard that Lot was taken captive, he mustered his troops and said, we're going after him. He was a mighty warrior. That would make sense that God would choose someone that was gracious and that he was a mighty warrior as well, when it came to picking someone to make a great nation of. Abram was hospitable. There's a story in Genesis chapter 18. It reads like this, the first part of it. The Lord appeared to him, Abram, by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, O Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that, you may pass on since you have come to your servant. So they said, do as you have said. Abraham went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quick, 3 seahs of fine flour, knead it, and make cakes." And Abraham ran to the herd, took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to a young man who prepared it quickly. Then he took curds and milk at the calf and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while they ate. Now, this seems like a pretty innocent story. Some guys show up, they're passing by. You're like, "Hey, why don't you stop, rest for a while? I'll feed you a little food that you can go on your way." The amount of flour that Abram asked Sarah to get was enough to bake 60 loaves of bread for 3 guys. Now, I consider myself a pretty big eater, obviously, right? And I can put it away when I'm feeling a little hungry. These guys have been traveling, but 60 loaves of bread? 60 loaves of bread. And he picks this cattle, and he's cooking steaks or pork chops. Not pork chops, they're Israelites, right? He's cooking steaks for them. He's putting that all before him. This obviously is taking a long time. He's like, "Let me get some water so I can wash your feet as well." Now, what makes this story more interesting and a little disturbing and maybe a little gross is that you read that he was sitting outside of his tent in the shade of a tree on a hot day. Why would Abram be doing that? Well, in the chapter immediately following, what you would discover is that God made a new covenant with Abram, and he was to seal himself by being circumcised. Now, if your husband is like my wife's husband, if I have any kind of surgery, I'm just a baby. Put me in my easy chair, bring me my Mountain Dew, bring me my whatever, I'll whine and make like a little baby as I'm trying to recover from all this. Hey, that's supposed to be funny, and I'm getting nothing out of you guys. Your husbands are obviously not like me, right? This is Abram. Abram's like, "I'm recovering from this surgery in a time where there's not surgery," right? And he's sitting in the shade, these friends come, and he jumps to, in all the pain that he's probably feeling, and he rushes to and makes all this bread and everything. Why would he do that? Because the same God that created him, that said, "Welcome to my world," and has been hospitable to us as a people, and said, "Subdue the earth and be fruitful and multiply, and I've given you all the plants and animals," all these different things. The same God created Abram, and Abram said, "I'm going to be the same kind of gracious, hospitable host that my Creator God is." And even in the midst of pain, that's how gracious Abram was to these 3 visitors that were passing by. So as we consider those things, the fact that Abram was hospitable, he was a warrior, he was a gracious person thinking of others, those may have been the reasons that God chose Abram. But we can't overlook the fact that as you read the story of Abram, you're going to find some things that you're like, that doesn't sound like a guy that God would choose for him. For example, Abram was a deceiver. Abram was a deceiver. In Genesis chapter 12, he and his wife were, there was a famine, and so they headed to Egypt so that they could find some food. And as they're going in, it says, when he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, "I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say you're my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake." Why would Abram do that right after God had promised, "I'm going to make you a great nation"? Well, you know how it just takes a little bit of yeast for bread to rise? I just wonder if there was a little bit of doubt, a little bit of fear in Abram that was rising as well. And it got to the point when he was coming into Egypt and seeing all this massive construction or structures around him and the people, and who knows if there were probably armed guards and that kind of thing, that he just thought, "You know what? You're a looker, Sarai, and I kind of don't want to be dead because of you. So let's just tell him that you're my sister, and we'll just kind of save ourselves." Now, what was he really offering this king? Ever slow down and think about that? When Abram says, "Tell him you're my sister, and when he takes you," what do you think "takes her" means? He's willing to give his wife over to all kinds of stuff that you're like, "Whoa, wait a second. I hope any man in this room would die for his wife before he'd just give her over to whatever king that wanted to do something," right? But Abram didn't do that. He was a deceiver and said, "Man, I'm kind of looking out for myself in this one." And again, even Abram, as gracious as he was and as much of a warrior he was, and as much of a man of faith that we would see later with Isaac that he was, he still was a man, a human being. And we know from Genesis 3 what human beings are capable of. Next, Abram showed a lack of faith. He showed a lack of faith. In Genesis chapter 15, God re-ups his covenant with Abram. He's like, I'm going to make you a great nation, Abram. You're doing great. Keep going on. In verses 2 and 3, this is how Abram responds. He says, O Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless. So he gives him this great covenant, and Abram just turns it on him and says, when? How? I know how biology works. It ain't working right now. And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. Abram said, behold, you've given me no offspring. A member of my household will be my heir. And so Abram, whose heart was supposed to be well cultivated soil that God could speak to and plant seeds of becoming a great nation and being a man of faith, instead was kind of starting to fall by the wayside. Instead of that good, healthy soil in his heart, God was making this promise with a man who was starting to really struggle with the cares of the world and time passing by and really struggling with it. Genesis chapter 20, from there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. So this is some 8 chapters past a story I told you the point before. He sojourned in Gerar, and Abraham said of Sarai, his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. He not only deceived once, he deceived a second time, also showing a lack of faith. And this is many years later, when you would think that his heart was well cultivated, that there was a lot of good fruit being yielded from his life, that he would be ready to go. But instead, he was in the moment where he thought about himself and he told Abimelech, this is my sister. And great things, bad things were going to happen to these kings that God spoke to them if they didn't turn Sarah loose. But Abraham showed a lack of faith. And finally, Abram showed a lack of leadership. He showed a lack of leadership. Genesis chapter 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go unto my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. I want to ask the question, when it comes to that story, where was the warrior Abram? And I ask that same story with Adam when in Genesis chapter 3, the serpent deceived Eve and said, oh, you won't surely die. In fact, you'll be like God. And she took the fruit and ate, and Adam was standing right there. Where was the warrior Adam that stood between his wife and his serpent and said, this is not good. I'm going to protect you. And in the same way, where was that warrior Abraham when he went into town, the warrior Abraham, when his wife came to him and said, God has not come through with this promise. I don't have any kids. You take my maidservant. That's how we're going to force God's hand. Where was our warrior Abraham to stand between and up to his wife to say, no, we are people of faith. We're going to trust God. And I know you're old and I know I'm old, but God said it. And when he said it, we take it to the bank. So when we take the fact that we have this mighty warrior, yes, he's gracious, yes, he is hospitable, yes, but we also see these flaws in Abram, why would God choose Abram for this job? Why would he be the guy that he would make a great nation? Why did God choose Abram for his plan? Well, I think it goes back to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, verses 27 through 32. Full disclosure, I was listening to a podcast this week where I learned this material and I was very excited about it. And I thought, wow, that is just really cool. And it's something that I had totally missed before that I want to share with you today. Okay, Genesis chapter 11, verses 27 through 32. This is how it starts, this call of Abram. Now, these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father, Terah in the land of his kindred, in Ur of the Chaldeans, and Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Ishcah. Now Sarai was barren, she had no child. Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, just a quick, brief intermission. There's a thing called the Tanakh. The Tanakh is an abbreviation for Jewish people for the law, the prophets, and the writings of the Old Testament. The Talmud are the collection of teachings by Jewish scholars and rabbis. Okay, so we have the Tanakh and we have the Talmud. And the Midrash are the rabbinic sages, methodical and thought-provoking process to teach the Tanakh and the Talmud. So the Midrash is a way to teach the Tanakh and the Talmud to the people. And the people that are part of the Midrash, they have to work through all of the Old Testament, including Genesis, and say, we need to understand this. And so when it came to Genesis chapter 11, verses 27 through 32, they said, how do we understand this? And why did God choose this guy to be the guy to make a great nation of? And this is what they discovered in their study. First, as you look up at the next screen, we have Terah. He's the father. And he had three sons, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Abram was probably the oldest. That's why his name is listed first. And Haran seemed to be, at one point, the only one that had kids. It doesn't mention his wife's name, but he had Lot. He mentions Lot first. I put the other two there because they're closer to the other circles. I'll show you that in a second. But Lot was his son. And then Haran died in the presence of his dad. So his dad outlived one of his sons. But before he died, he also had Milcah and Ishka. Now, as was common in that day, if your brother died, it was a responsibility that you had to provide children for his namesake. It's called a kinsman redeemer. They would introduce that in Exodus. But it also, if you consider this, what did we have left after Haran died? We had Lot. He's a son. He's a boy. He's going to be expected to grow crops, get married, have kids, be able to sustain life for his family. But then he had these two daughters. These two daughters without a father were probably going to struggle and not be able to make it in life because that's the way their culture was. So then as we continue reading, if we show the next slide, this is what we discover. Nahor marries Milcah, and then he mentions this other daughter, Ishka. And what the Midrash did when they studied that is that they came to the conclusion is that Ishka is Sarai. And because it mentions Abram's name first in marrying these two ladies, the Midrash said, Abram, it was his idea. And then it says about Sarai or Ishka, what? That she was barren. It doesn't say that about Milcah. So when you put all this together, if I've not scrambled your brain enough, all right, I'll try to summarize in this way. I believe that God chose Abram because he was the most Christ-like person he could find. Abram married Ishka, Sarai, because her future was nothing. She was barren. She was a woman in a culture, and her father had died. And Abram, just like with Lot, he could have had any of the land he wanted. He could have picked between the nieces. I know it sounds gross, but that was her culture, okay? He could have picked between either one of them, one that can have kids and one can't. And he chose because he got to choose first the one who couldn't. I believe that God chose Abram because Abram's heart was to look after those who couldn't look after themselves. You and I, when we are born into this world, and until we find Jesus, we can't be saved on our own. We can't save ourselves. We can't save ourselves. But God, in his love for us, sent his son to die for us, making a way that salvation could be had. We serve a God who looks after his creation, who couldn't do it ourselves. Abram was a man who looked after Ishka, Sarai, and said, she can't make it on her own. I'm stepping in, and this is how this is going to play out. Proving that he not only was a man that God would have to work miracles through for all this to take place, but proving that he chose a man that was after his own heart. A God that cares enough to love those who can't do it on their own. How does all this translate for what's the big so what for you and I? A couple of things. Number one, God has a calling on your life. He has a calling on your life. And the more we surrender to him and have a heart like Jesus, the bigger plans that he's going to have for us. And the journey is not going to be easy. There are going to be times when you feel like deceiving people around you. There are going to be times when you feel like your faith is maybe waning just a little bit. There are going to be times when you're not the warrior God created you to be. But He chose you. He chose you to be a people that He would welcome into His eternity someday. And while the journey won't be easy, it'll be well worth it in the end. Because the same God that promised to make Abram a great nation and that through him all the nations would be blessed is the same God that says, I'm sending the Son back again someday to make all things new. And everyone that has surrendered to him, who've united with him, who belong to him, will be taken home to be with him again. And why? Because he's a God who looks after the people that can't care for themselves. That's what was proven in Genesis 1 through 11. And that's how he chose Abram to say, that's the guy with the heart that I can work with. If you're here today and you've never surrendered your life to Jesus Christ, if you've never gotten on that path, that journey to say, I want to be on destination Jesus pathway with the people of Kalkaska Church of Christ, I would love to talk with you about what all that means at the cross as the worship team comes and sings. If you're here today as a believer, I would simply ask you this. When you look in the mirror, do you see more of you or do you see more of Jesus? Because when we see more of Jesus than we see of ourselves, God says, that's the person I can work with. And He wants to do great works through you and I. Let's stand up and sing. Father, again, we thank you so much for your love and your kindness, your graciousness toward us. We know that we are a people that can't save ourselves, and so we thank you for making a way for that to take place. We thank you for seeing a people that needed mercy and needed grace. And while, yes, we need discipline oftentimes, we know that you're able to see past all of that and still love us. We thank you for your forgiveness that you extend to us through Jesus on the cross. Father, my simple prayer is that if there is someone here today that's never surrendered their life to you, that today might be that day. That today might be that day. For those of us that have surrendered to you, Father, I pray that when we look in the mirror, we see more Jesus than we see of ourselves. And that we're looking for more Jesus than we look for of ourselves. And that we might be used in a mighty way by you, just like Abram. It's in Jesus' mighty name that we pray. Amen.